Welcome in, everybody, to Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. This is Cody Westerlund of 670 The Score, alongside co-host Sean Hyken of Bleacher Report and NBC Sports. As always, you can follow us on Twitter, at Locked On Bulls, at Cody Westerlund, at Hyken. Please do find our podcast on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Audio Boom, whatever is easiest for you. Subscribe, leave a review. Email us at lockedonbulls@gmail.com with basketball questions, advertising opportunities. But today is the 4th of July, and we had some fireworks in the NBA, of course, with the big signing of Kevin Durant to the Golden State Warriors. Initial reaction, Sean, to that seismic move in the NBA?
I mean, we always knew this was in play, but I just... Through all these, you know, the whole weekend, he was taking meetings with these teams, and there were reports that the Warriors really impressed him. And I just thought that ultimately he was, especially when you heard the reports that he was trying to recruit Al Horford to come to Oklahoma City with him, I just always thought the thing that made the most sense for him to do was take the 1-1 deal and go back to Oklahoma City for one more year. But, I mean, I can't blame him for going to Golden State. They're instantly the title favorites. He's going to join arguably the greatest team of all time.
Yeah, that's a 73-win team that just replaced a solid player in Harrison Barnes with a top two NBA player. You certainly hit the nail on the head. That's arguably the best starting five in NBA history. You can question whether you can put together five other players from across the NBA that might be able to beat this team. Obviously, you need a lot of depth and such, and a lot of things can go wrong, but I mean, they have four of the top 12 players maybe in the NBA, depending where you rank Draymond Green at,
and Klay Thompson.
But the Warriors are absolutely stacked. I would say I was surprised by KD's decision to leave for the Warriors. Not shocked, because you knew he valued winning, and you have to know that Bob Myers is a great salesman. Steve Kerr, same thing. Steph Curry, Draymond Green, Klay Thompson are engaging personalities, so you get them in a room together, you know their sales pitch is going to be terrific. And reading reports, it sounded like Bob Myers said, hey, you can win a title or two maybe in Oklahoma City, we can keep winning a title or two here in Golden State, or we can just team up and we're going to win a lot of titles together in the next 6, 7, 8 years. Is that what you think was going to happen in that sense? I mean, is he a great fit for the Warriors?
Absolutely, he's a great fit. I mean, the thing is, Durant is not the kind of guy. I mean, you can talk about, oh, how is he going to deal with, you know, not getting a lot of touches. He's played with Russell Westbrook for the last 8 years. It's not like he's been the man, and now he has to deal with not being the man. It's going to be a lot easier to play with Steph, who's also a pretty unselfish guy. He's always been willing to let Klay Thompson just go off when Klay Thompson gets hot. And I think, I mean, with Steve Kerr, just his ability to get guys to buy in. And Durant, the other thing is, Durant, I think, obviously thought about this stuff when he made the decision. I think he probably thought about what the chemistry was going to be like before he made the decision. So I don't see that being a problem.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting, too, because it's a 2-year deal, $54 million. He can opt out a player option next year. But all indications are, I mean, he wants to win. And it would seem like this is where Durant would be long-term. What kind of caught me was KD for years had kind of, he valued that hometown feel in Oklahoma City, kind of being the adopted son and the leader of that franchise, and bringing it up after it moved from Seattle to a small market, and he seemed to enjoy that. And I come back to Game 6 of the Western Conference Finals. How big of a difference does 4 or 5 minutes of basketball make? The Thunder had, I think, a 6-point lead midway through the fourth quarter of that game, and Klay Thompson just kept going off from 3-point range. One play here or there tilted the game in the Warriors' favor, and you are changing the direction of two franchises. You're changing the direction of the NBA to a large-scale degree based on the outcome of that game, because I think KD goes back to Oklahoma City, at least for another year, if they beat the Warriors in that series. Would you agree?
I do. So, I mean, yeah, that game really, like that game, that, or not even that game, but that last 6 minutes of the fourth quarter of Game 6, that swung the balance of power in the NBA for the next 6 years.
Yeah, and it's just, it's so crazy how one or two small plays can do that. But that is the NBA. And what else is the NBA is people getting mad on social media, on talk radio, on everything about KD teaming up and forming a super team. We've been over this in 2010, I believe, when LeBron went to Miami to team up with Chris Bosh and Dwayne Wade. He obviously got some hate. KD's getting a little bit of pushback, I would say. There's some mad Oklahoma City fans, which I understand why they're disappointed. But where does this come from? In any other industry of life, I think we would be happy for someone who leaves for the best company or the highest tier organization they can in their chosen field of choice. And that's what KD did more or less here.
Yeah, I think part of it, I don't think there would have been this level of anger if he had gone to the Celtics or one of the other options he had on the table. I feel like, with, you know, part of this is, I mean, obviously there's always going to be a lot of, oh, well, you know, Jordan never would have gone and played, teamed up with some of his, you know, rivals. He would have tried. Like, there's always going to be that stuff. There was that same stuff when LeBron went to Miami in 2010. But I feel like the other part of it is the Warriors became such villains over the last few months in the playoffs. Like, everybody, I mean, they were the darlings of the league for a couple of years. They win the title last year, and everybody talks about how likable Steph Curry is and how much fun to watch they are. And then, you know, people start feeling like they got too arrogant, and then Joe Lacob makes those comments about them being light years ahead as an organization. And then obviously the stuff with Draymond in the playoffs with the hitting people in places that you shouldn't hit people. Like, there's been a little bit of a public, you know, change of sentiment on the Warriors, and they're kind of, it's kind of popular to hate them right now. And so then the idea that Kevin Durant is going there right after the Warriors just beat his team in the playoffs. Like, I can see where that's coming from. I don't agree with it. I think Durant can do whatever he wants, and I would have done the same thing in his case. But I just kind of, like, trying to understand where some of that's coming from. I kind of get it.
Yeah, I have two views here. A, I think it's great for Kevin Durant. Obviously, the public values championships, and that's what he's chasing. He got a lot of money. He's doing what he feels is best for himself. I'm excited to watch the Warriors play as a basketball fan. At the same time, I'm a little disappointed. I wanted to run it back one more time. Thunder Warriors in the Western Conference Finals again next year, maybe, because I thought that would have been a great series once again. And I did like the KD-Russ pairing, and I know it didn't always make sense basketball-wise, being the most fluid of pairings because Russ is crazy and runs around the court, and that's a great aside. A great subplot is, what on earth is Russ going to do next year? He's going to go into overdrive for 82 games after this KD leaving move here.
If you play fantasy, and I don't anymore, but if you play fantasy, Russ has to be the number one pick in every single fantasy league.
Yep, that's our advice of the day. Draft Russ Westbrook in fantasy leagues. Because you remember 2014-15 was when KD had the foot problem, and Russ just went crazy the last, like, month and a half of the season, had that really big MVP push. I remember him coming to the United Center and, like, single-handedly leading the Thunder past the Bulls almost. I think Etuan Moore actually hit a big three-pointer.
That was the game winner, yeah.
Yeah, to win that game. But it was amazing how hard he played for so long and how much he did then with KD out. And now you're looking at, if the Thunder don't trade him, which it would seem like they would have to reflect and look inward and maybe rebuild from the ground up if they think he's going to leave in free agency in summer 2017. If they don't do that, then he's going to be a wild maniac out there, and it's going to be great entertainment.
Honestly, even if they do trade him, whatever team he goes to, he's going to feel spurned by Kevin Durant. He's going to want to prove. Now, as far as them trading him or not, Brian Windhorst at ESPN just reported today that the Thunder might try to do a renegotiation and extension of Russ's contract, which I don't know why he would take it, but if he doesn't take it, then they might field offers for him. If I'm the Celtics, you just sign Al Horford. So now you have a legitimate star who's 30 years old. And, like, suddenly the Celtics aren't this up-and-coming team. Like, oh, we got to, you know, we have all these assets. We're building for the future. You sign a 30-year-old Al Horford who's had injury problems. You kind of have to win now. Even though his contract is up next year, I feel like if you're the Celtics, you throw all of your Brooklyn picks, all of your assets at the Thunder, try to get Russ, and just go all in on a Russell Westbrook, Al Horford core to try to unseat the Cavs.
Yeah, this could have ramifications in the Eastern Conference, too, the fallout moves of all this over the next several seasons.
And speaking of which, let's talk about the Bulls signing Rajon Rondo.
I was going to just about say that. The Rajon Rondo era has begun in Chicago 16 hours or so before KD made his big announcement. News broke. Rondo to the Bulls on a two-year deal, $28 million. And we're still trying to figure out exactly what the last year of the contract is. Reports indicate it's not fully guaranteed money. We're not sure if it's a partial guarantee for year two yet, or if there's a complete kind of opt-out from the Bulls or Rondo's side. But it doesn't sound like it's fully guaranteed. From a basketball sense, Rajon Rondo is 30 years old, not as good as he used to be. He's clashed with some coaches in the past. Led the NBA in assists last year, 11.7 per game. Shot 36.5% on three-pointers, a respectable number. He's still a 29% career three-point shooter. From a basketball sense, Sean, does this make sense for the Bulls?
No, not at all. I've been over the last 12 hours or so since this kind of broke, I have been trying to figure out a way in which this actually makes sense. And I mean, we talked about the partial guarantee on the second year. It's essentially a one-year deal. There's no such thing as a bad one-year deal. There's no long-term risk here. But from a basketball standpoint, I just don't understand what the Bulls are doing. They said they wanted to get younger and more athletic. They signed a 30-year-old point guard who is not any better of a shooter than Derrick Rose and might actually be worse. They signed a guy who really, I mean, he used to be a really good defender for his position back, you know, when the Celtics were contending for titles, but he hasn't been good on that end in about 4 years. He led the league in assists last year, but I almost feel like bringing that up is a lot like bringing up Pau Gasol's double-double averages this year. I feel like a lot of it was just kind of stat padding and empty, you know, fantasy numbers. Rajon Rondo in 2016 doesn't make a team better, and he's also just, as a personality, you mentioned clashing with coaches. He clashed with Rick Carlisle. He clashed with George Karl. He even clashed a little bit with Doc Rivers back when they were in Boston. Yeah. I don't get this from, like, after all the drama that they had last year with, you know, Jimmy Butler not being on the same page with Fred Hoiberg a lot of the time, what the Bulls should have been doing, like, I get, you know, if you want to sign a veteran as a stopgap to save face, you should try to target somebody who's not going to cause any kind of off-court drama, and Rondo has a history of doing that. The idea of Fred Hoiberg, who's like the most mild-mannered coach in the league probably, trying to, you know, get through to Rondo and, you know, being on a get a good relationship with him, that has potential for disaster to me.
Yeah, the Rondo trouble in Dallas in 2014-15 with Rick Carlisle, and mind you, Rick Carlisle is one of the most respected and best coaches.
Rick Carlisle is also a hard ass. Rick Carlisle is the opposite of Fred Hoiberg.
Absolutely, and they clashed. A lot of it was over play calling. Rick Carlisle's very hands-on, micromanager in that sense, calling a lot of plays, and Rondo had a lot of pushback on that, and it kind of manifested itself in an outburst on the court in front of everybody, so that was a big deal. So I think Fred will give Rondo more freedom, so that might be a better starting point for them, and I want to explain it from the Bulls' perspective. Sure. Not that I agree, but we have hammered this home for like our last six podcast episodes. The Bulls were going to be really bad at point guard if they didn't sign someone or trade for someone. You were looking at big minutes for Jaren Grant or Jose Calderon or putting Denzel Valentine a lot of point guard minutes when you'd rather ideally use him on the wing. So once Etuan Moore went to the Pelicans on Friday night since our last podcast, that has happened. He's out of the picture. The Bulls did need to do something with that backcourt. And I do think they added a couple of wins probably by adding Rondo to the picture because you're just better at basketball with him than big minutes for someone else. But you have to pick a lane if you're the Bulls. And I don't know that they're all in on rebuilding. They're obviously not contending for a championship next year, but it feels like they still want to make the playoff push, save some face, get a better record, and just get a little more respect heading into summer 2017 to attract high-profile free agents when they have more money then. I think they're probably thinking it's easier if we can get maybe 44, 45 wins, which I think is asking for a lot next year at this point for the Bulls. If we can do that, then attract these guys. I think that's their frame of mind. And they didn't want to go out there and win 28 games and have troubles at point guard and then be attracting people in free agency. So I think that plays into, from the basketball perspective, win a few more games with this guy than you otherwise would have because it would have been bad from a point guard situation.
Right, and he's a name, so like I get it from that standpoint. My thing with, I mean, your point about, you know, Fred Hoiberg maybe giving him more freedom to call plays than Carlisle did is well taken. But here's the question. Even if Fred Hoiberg gives him a lot of freedom to kind of run the offense, is Jimmy Butler going to be okay with another guy who wants to make, you know, be the decision maker? Because, I mean, as much as Derrick Rose is ball dominant, like, he's not the kind of guy who's like, I have to be the one that dictates Correct. The offense. Rondo, you know, given, you know, his pedigree and, you know, what he's done in his career, he kind of does have to be that. And obviously Jimmy Butler, they just traded Derrick Rose, so they basically handed the franchise over to Jimmy. Do you think Jimmy's going to be okay with another strong personality like Rondo coming in?
Yeah, if Jimmy couldn't get along with Derrick, who's a laid-back personality off the court, I know, again, like you said, needed the ball on it. It will be very interesting. His relationship with Rondo will be under a microscope here because they do need to get along on the basketball floor. And there are a lot of the same problems in bringing in Rondo from a basketball sense as Butler experienced with Rose. Once again, Rondo, bad three-point shooter for most of his career. Not a spot-up guy. Teams are going to leave him wide open if he's off the ball.
That's the thing. That's the thing about this to me. With Rose, like, Rose wasn't a good outside shooter, but at least, like, he still had that reputation as, oh, it's Derrick Rose. You know, he's the former MVP. He's used to be an incredible scorer at one point in his career. Teams are still going to guard him and respect him. With Rondo, like, teams are just going to straight up give him the Tony Allen treatment on offense and just not guard him and dare him to shoot, and he's not going to make them pay.
Yeah, and Rondo did, he shot around 45, 46% from the field last year, so he did finish better than Derrick Rose in getting into the lane and around the rim. So that has to be the hope for the Bulls, is that he can still slash to the hoop a little bit and make plays and make the game easier for others. Defensively, on the flip side, he has been a transcendent defender earlier in his career when he was with the Celtics at times, always among the lead leader in steals, just creating havoc for other teams. He's a shade of his former self.
Hasn't been the same since the ACL in 2013.
Yep, that was that kind of set him back, obviously. He's responded well, I think, from that, but he hasn't approached the game, I don't think, with the same attitude when it comes to being a winning basketball player. And he gambles a lot on defense. And I don't know that the Bulls, when you got Nico and McDermott out there maybe quite a bit, Denzel Valentine's going to have questions, obviously, about his defense in his first season with the Bulls. I don't know what happens when you have a defender who's starting and initiating the defense in Rondo, who's taking gambles and trying to make high-risk, high-reward plays, and then that can backfire and set your defense off. But, I mean, dating back to that press conference to end the year, John Paxton called out Derrick Rose's defense, so Rajon Rondo's defense is going to matter a lot here for the Bulls as well.
Yeah, it is. I mean, at least Rondo kind of, he's one of those guys who has that reputation of being a good defender, even if it's not true anymore. So I almost feel like people are going to come in giving him a little bit more leeway just because he has that reputation from back when he was with the Celtics of being such a deadly defender from the point guard position. But it's going to be really interesting to watch. You know, maybe he, if he, you know, this is kind of his last chance to really prove that he's a, you know, a guy that somebody wants to sign to a long-term deal.
Yeah, and to round back, you bring his contract back up. The part about the partial guarantee for year two, or it possibly being a complete opt-out kind of from the Bulls or Rondo's perspective, the Bulls were hesitant. They didn't want to put forth a lot of long-term money and kind of restrict themselves in summer 2017. They're going to have Jimmy's contract around, what, $19 million probably that year. Lopez's at center around $14 million or so. Cap's going to go up to $107, $110 million then.
Calderon is coming off the books, too.
Yeah, absolutely. So that the Rondo part affects them if he is in play for year two. That could kind of hamstring them if they want to go for two max free agents. And again, that's kind of a pipe dream, but it's also a play that you got to keep using if you're an NBA team and you're in a big market and you do have a starting point with Jimmy Butler and a few good pieces around him. The goal is always to attract top-tier talent whatever way you can, and free agency is a way you have to chase that. So the Bulls, they got some team protection, I think, is what their approach probably was to keep that flexibility open. And again, we'll know more details about that later, I'm sure. But wanted to transition into a few of your questions on Twitter. We'll stay at the point guard position and what it means for the Bulls moving forward. Should the Bulls make a run at Russell Westbrook this year or next? That question comes from Zaffino on Twitter. And again, Rondo in the picture for one more year. Russell Westbrook, now a headlining free agent in summer 2017. Your thoughts, Sean?
I mean, yeah, they should try to sign Russ next summer, but I'm not sure why he would decide to come to the Bulls out of all of his options that he's going to have.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Make a play for him. I mean, he's a top five player in the NBA.
You have to call his agent and get them to say no to a meeting. But yeah. I just, if you're Russ, you know, maybe he, you know, he's going to have so many options I don't see why. And it's just like with every one of these other free agents, I don't see why the Bulls would be the team that he decides to go to.
Yeah, I don't see any trade chips the Bulls could put together either earlier. If the Thunder are going to rebuild somehow and let Russ Westbrook go in the next year and get something for him because they're afraid he'll walk, I'm sure there'd be serious discussions with a team like the Celtics, who has more assets.
Or even the Lakers if they want it, because Russ is a point guard, so you know getting him would make like D'Angelo Russell and Jordan Clarkson redundant. They'd probably have a better package to put together too. And Russ is also an LA guy. He went to UCLA for college. Like it would make sense.
Yeah, and he's a man of the people. He loves his fashion and clothing and brand. I think LA might be good for him in that sense. And we're getting a little ahead of ourselves here. But hey, those are your questions. That's what everyone always wants to know. Talking about the future, we have Chicago Sports News on Twitter. Moving forward, should the Bulls be really aggressive in trying to trade Taj Gibson and Mike Dunleavy for future assets? I say absolutely. Yes. I mean, this is a rebuild, whether they want to admit it or not.
They should try. I don't know what they'll get for him. I mean, I think Taj, we've talked about this before on the show. Taj, I think, is going to have more value than Dunleavy because I think he has a little bit more to contribute at this point on the court. But it's like, if you're trying to get younger and just, and you know, get rid of some of these veterans, you just brought in Rajon Rondo. Like, this goes back. Like, at that point, if your whole point is to just try to save face and be competitive, maybe you just try to ride out the last year of Taj's deal. But yeah, if you can get something that's good for the future, like a young player or a future pick for one of those guys, you got to do it.
Yeah, a lot depends on how the Bulls start, too. If it's a strong start, you know, they get out there 12-6, something like that. They're 15-10. They probably keep trekking forward as they go and won't be too active right away in the trade market because, again, they do want to try to get some form of respectability back so they can properly evaluate Fred Hoiberg, I think, as a coach and also, again, set themselves up better for the future. Remember, winning is usually almost always better than losing still. If you do the complete tank and pull it off perfectly, yes, losing it's great, it has some value. But winning in general is still better than losing the NBA. I think people forget that sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, even you know, the Sixers did their whole thing. They're still not, like, maybe, you know, Ben Simmons might be that guy. After 3 years of tanking, they finally got the number one pick. He might be that guy, but if he's not, they come out of that whole ordeal without a clear-cut number one guy. I mean, unless you're Oklahoma City and you just get so lucky that you just, you know, luck into Durant, Westbrook, Harden, and Ibaka in three consecutive drafts, and then you're just set up for the next 8 years, then you're good. But that's just, the chances of that happening are really low. So if you're, you know, if you're the Bulls, it's probably, unless you're going to just completely commit to it and trade Jimmy and get a bunch of future picks, because that's the only thing they have on their roster that they could actually get real pieces back for. And I know it doesn't seem like they're really intending to trade Jimmy at this point.
Yeah, and that ties back again to pick a lane, rebuild from the ground up, or keep trying to win. And it feels like the Bulls are somewhere in the middle here still, as they've pretty much made their most high-profile move they will, I think, in free agency, obviously. We should note that the Bulls are now to about $85 million committed in salary for next season, so that has reached the NBA salary floor on the $94 million salary cap. So the Bulls don't have to add anyone else just for the sake of reaching the salary floor. Next question comes from Paige Vadat on Twitter, our most famous podcast follower and listener,
I think. Make sure you watch Bones.
Absolutely. Big fans of Bones now. Paige asks, who, if any, players do you see the Bulls making a trade for this offseason or this coming season? Hard question. I don't see another big move coming this offseason, of course, other than maybe a minor trade for Taj or Mike Dunleavy going out and getting a lesser asset back. Maybe, I should say, bigger picture asset for the future back.
Right. Like, if they're trading for anybody, it might be either, like, a lower-level rotation player or a pick, and I can't think of anybody off the top of my head that might be.
Yeah, I think a wing player, if the Bulls were to add someone, another wing player. I mean, they did desire Etuan Moore coming back to Chicago if the price had been right. And I believe Vinny Goodwill of Comcast reported that the Bulls offered 3 years. The Pelicans gave him four. So that certainly played into the decision for Etuan to have more guaranteed money moving toward the future for him. As for the Bulls, they liked that combo guard that he was and how he could play solid defense and knock down three-pointers. So maybe someone like that. We'll have to see how the trade market plays out a little bit more here moving forward. Kyle on Twitter asks, if all goes south for the Bulls this year, is Cristiano Felicio the team's starting power forward?
I don't think so. I mean, even if they trade Taj, they still have Nico Mirotic and Bobby Portis at that position. I think they view... I mean, at this point, Felicio is their primary backup center because they have Robin Lopez. Pau is gone. Noah is gone. Felicio is their only other five besides Lopez, so I think that's really where he's going to be playing the most.
Yeah, and we should point out, reports indicate Pau Gasol has signed with the San Antonio Spurs after Durant went to the Warriors. He was the objective A for the Spurs. Didn't get him settled for Pau Gasol, I guess a little bit like the Bulls a couple years ago in chasing Carmelo. Obviously, the Spurs have more transcendent players than the Bulls do, more difference makers. So, do you like Pau in San Antonio?
I think he's going to really enjoy getting along with Pop and bonding over their mutual loves of wine and opera. I think it's a good fit for him in that standpoint.
They're both very cultured individuals, world kind of travelers, guys like that.
And especially, I mean, I think he's a decent fit for them basketball-wise, especially these reports, Woj reported earlier today that Tim Duncan is strongly leaning towards retirement. So, you know, he'll fill those minutes. He'll certainly have an opportunity to play there. I don't know if he'll start next to LaMarcus Aldridge, but...
Does anyone have a chance to run down the Warriors, who I have projected for an easy 68 wins? They're not going to strain themselves chasing a record again, I don't think, next year. But
no.
I see 68 easy wins for them. Spurs, yeah. Can the Spurs chase them?
I don't think so. I mean, you have two of probably the five best shooters in NBA history on the same team. And then Klay Thompson, who's also one of the probably 10 best shooters in NBA history. Like, I just don't... And plus, you think you've got other guys. Durant's a pretty good defender. He's not maybe as good as LeBron was at his peak, but he's a pretty good defender. Still got Iguodala. You've still got Draymond. I just don't see anybody really... Some weird stuff would have to happen like it did this year for the Warriors to lose. But now, like, the Warriors having... You know, now it's like you replace Harrison Barnes with Kevin Durant. Like, I don't see it.
Yeah. So, again, the two seismic moves in the NBA... In the last 24 hours, Kevin Durant to the Warriors, Rajon Rondo to the Bulls, and
equal in impact across the league.
Yeah, well, a little bit, but we know you had been clamoring for the Bulls to do something, so we're happy that we had something to talk about from a basketball standpoint, from an entertainment standpoint. I think there will be new topics for us to broach.
It's all I'm in this for,
and ride on the Bulls. So the Bulls had promised some sort of house cleaning, some sort of change. They've certainly done that. We will certainly continue to monitor what they do. We'll be back, we envision, tomorrow with another podcast as well to tie up some more loose ends in free agency, talk more Bulls, talk more NBA. But again, please email us at lockedonbulls@gmail.com with any basketball questions, any advertising opportunities. Follow us on Twitter, at LockedOnBulls, at Hyken, at Cody Westerland, and most of all, subscribe to our podcast. We're on iTunes, we're on Stitcher, we're on Audio Boom. Have a great rest of the 4th of July, and we will catch you soon.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99. And our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.